This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
At your service, it's the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of His beauty on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good morning. It's the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape here in St. Louis. And here in St. Louis this morning, it is foggy and warm, kind of crazy for the week after Christmas. I hope you guys made it through Christmas okay. I was just asking James here in the studio how his Christmas was, and mine was pleasantly uneventful. I ditched the family this year and kind of had a quiet day at home. And I honestly, it was pretty great. So watched some TV, ate some delicious food, and just enjoyed the day. So I hope you guys had a great Christmas and made it through. You know, I'd love to hear if you guys got any garden related presents for Christmas. I know that I did. I got some nice hand cream that was made from a coworker from some things that were grown from her garden. And then I also got a really great book this year as well, called Service Berry, which you guys know is one of my favorite shrubs/trees. And the book is really great. It's from the same author as Switchgrass or Braiding Sweetgrass, which I'm sure a lot of you guys have read before. Robin Wall. Kimmer is also, you know, the author of this book as well. It's a great one. It's really talking a lot about the service berry and using it as kind of a metaphor for how we can all live in the world. You know, how the service berry is really great in its community. It uses its flowers in the spring to attract early pollinators. The berries are used for us humans to eat and for the birds to eat, and those birds take those seeds and make more service berries, you know, kind of creating this circle of life, if you will. But a great book so far. I've read the first chapter. But yeah, if you guys got any great Christmas gifts, let us know. 314-436-7900. That's the number to call or text any of your garden related questions. It may not be, you know, a top of mind right now for you to be thinking of your gardens this week, kind of in between Christmas and New Year's is, you know, not technically or typically a time for a lot of gardening, but we have had some warmer temperatures. And if you get out there before tomorrow, you might be able to get some work done. But it has been really wet out there, especially considering we haven't really had any rain. So things are a little damp. But, you know, before the show, Scott was mentioning on the news break that, you know, the St. Louis City, St. Louis County is having Christmas tree recycling. So if you guys are going to be taking down your Christmas trees this weekend, definitely all of those natural Christmas trees. Great idea to, if you don't have curbside pickup, I know that a lot of folks in the county, St. Charles, and other places do get their lawn waste pickup that comes around here in the next week or so. And it's easy enough to just throw it out there to the curb. But there are tons of places out there that you can do some Christmas tree recycling, including, you know, the St. Louis City does some recycling. You can take it to the Lower Muni parking lot at Forest Park. Carondelet Park has a drop-off area, as well as O'Fallon Park. And our friends over at St. Louis Composting also accept trees. I do believe they have a small fee for that, a couple bucks, and to drop that off. And they will, of course, turn it into mulch or compost, which is great. And, you know, part of the benefit of doing this at different locations, you know, they may make mulch out of it. They may use it for conservation. You know, a lot of places will take it and drop it in the lake to help create habitat for those nice little fishies under the water. You know, places like Crevecoeur Lake Park in Maryland Heights does such a thing. Queenie Park, Bee Tree Park, Spanish Lake. And also Fix Supply, they also accept Christmas trees. So think about that when you guys are taking your trees down. And then, of course, you got to make sure all of those decorations, all the tinsel, all the lights, all of that stuff is off the tree before you take it there. Even when you think about those wreaths, if you got a live wreath, be careful with those because those have a metal ring in them. So if you're going to try to recycle any of that, you'll have to take that apart. And also a lot of places still doing Christmas light recycling. If you guys have lights that you no longer need, or maybe they're not working for some reason, those you don't have to throw those away, and you can't put those in your normal recycling bins. But there's a lot of locations around. I know that there are several local area Lowe's that are accepting Christmas lights. There's one in Kirkwood. There's over one over in Illinois somewhere, and Maplewood Commons is actually doing it as well. And I believe they just have like a little cardboard box or something at the entry at those places. But you know, there's other local recycling companies that are taking your Christmas lights as well. So if we can try to keep those out of the landfill, that would be great. I know I just gave a lot of information on that, but if you guys go to stlcityrecycles.com, all of that information is there. Or if you are in a local municipality like St. Charles or something like that, go to your local city or county website for more information. But stlcityrecycles.com has a lot of great information for both recycling your Christmas trees and your holiday lights. So make sure you do that. We've already got some people on the line. We're going to go straight to the phones right now. Dorothy, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Okay. I got a Christmas cactus for Christmas. How do I take care of it?
Oh, I love that you got a plant for Christmas. I think those are great gifts. Yes. And I love the Christmas cactus. And one of the things I love about it is that I haven't killed mine yet. I've actually had a few of them for several years. So that bodes well for everybody listening, because if I haven't killed it, it must be easy to take care of, because I promise you I've already half killed the poinsettia I got a few weeks ago. So the Christmas cactus are, like I said, relatively easy to take care of. You know, the name cactus in the title sometimes is a little deceptive, because some other folks out there that have other types of cactus will think, well, I don't have to water this thing very often, once a month or every couple of months for some types of cactus. But the Christmas cactus is actually a tropical type of cactus, so it needs a little bit more water than others. So I water mine, and depending on what size of pot you have, it could be around a half a cup, let's say, if you have a small pot. And I water mine about every 3 weeks. And what I do is I check that soil with my finger before I water. I want to make sure that it if it needs it or doesn't. So one of the easiest things to do is either look at the soil or use your finger and just feel if that soil is wet or not. And if it still has any moisture at all, you don't need to water it. So you want to let those Christmas cactus dry out a little bit, maybe 50 to 75% between waterings. And then a little bit goes a long way. So maybe like a half a cup if you just have maybe a 6-inch pot or the size of pot that it came in. And if it has any of that that packaging around the base, like poinsettias and those Christmas cactuses have, I would go ahead and take that off so that it doesn't get, you know, any kind of disease or fungus or mold growing in there. But relatively easy to take care of. There's no, you know, when it blooms, it may bloom a couple of times a year, but it does typically bloom a little bit before Christmas, and then mine blooms just sporadically throughout the year with no rhyme or reason. And when that happens, the blooms will kind of fade away, and you can kind of deadhead those with your hands, or you can just let them fall off naturally. But very low maintenance, very easy to care for. They do want some light, so you want to try to get them near some natural light if you can. They don't really love too much shade, so at least some indirect light would make them really happy. All right, Dorothy, thanks so much for the question. Good luck with that cactus. Up next, we are going to go to Bill. Bill, go ahead with your question.
Hi. I've got a large oak leaf hydrangea with a bunch of little sprouts coming up underneath it, which I assume are growing up shallow feeder roots. And I was wondering if I want to transplant some of those, does there need to be like its own little root ball right by the sprout, or can I just cut the feeder root?
So you can try to cut the feeder root. If you're going to do it that way, I would put it into a pot for a little while and try to nurture that and get more roots rooted in. But when you cut that off, just make sure, you know, if it's one that hopefully will already have some roots growing. So you don't necessarily need to get the root ball, but you do want to kind of pick one that already has some roots growing. So maybe pull back some of that soil, make sure it's one that's got some rooting going on. And then I would put it in a pot so you can control it. If you just stick it right back into the ground, it can dry out really fast and easily. But yeah, absolutely, you can do that.
So if the feeder root is kind of bare by that sprout, just forget that one and try a different one.
Yeah, or go down a little further to see if there's any roots further down.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Great. Thanks.
All right. Good luck. Great question so far, guys. We are going to take a quick break. 314-436-7900. That's the number to call or text the Garden Hotline on 1041 KMOX.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am your host and Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape. And I'm here answering any of your garden or plant-related questions today. Also, would love to hear about any kinds of Christmas presents that you got that are plant-related. We had Dorothy call in a bit ago talking about her Christmas cactus, which is a great present to give and receive. Again, that number, 314-436-7900. We're available for text as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about some events going on at the Botanical Garden. You know, the Garden Glow is still going on. I'm actually going there tonight at the Botanical Garden. I haven't actually been in a couple of years, so I am looking forward to going, and hopefully it will still be warm. I know that cold front is moving in, but hoping that I won't freeze out there tonight. But if you don't know about it, it's, you know, the Botanical Garden has been doing it for years. It's going on now. It started, you know, about a month ago or so, but it's going until January 3rd. You can still get tickets to go. It is obviously in the evening, so you can see all of the 2 million lights that they put up there. But they, you know, do a great job. You get to walk through the garden and see all of their light displays, all the different animations and the different things that they have going on out there. I believe they have campfires going and photo opportunities and interactive features for you guys to do. But I'm looking forward to that. And you still have a few more days to get out there. If you haven't yet, January 3rd is the last day for that. But out there today, there is an event for Kwanzaa. It's the Kwanzaa Festival of Fruits, First Fruits. But basically, they're celebrating Kwanzaa, honoring the African-American cultural holiday. It's rooted in the seven principles of community, creativity, and collective well-being. This is for guests of all ages. They're invited to learn, reflect, and enjoy hands-on activities throughout the day. And that is today only from 9 a.m. Starts in about a half an hour, goes all the way till 1 o'clock tonight. So, you know, and the one of the things I love about the Botanical Garden, and if you're, you know, close to St. Louis, we are really lucky to have such a resource there because they have all kinds of classes that they offer there. They have speakers, all of that good stuff for members and non-members alike. You don't have to be a member, but I do encourage it. You get a lot of benefits for being a member. And you know, it's such a great place to go throughout the year. I think, you know, sometimes we forget about how beautiful things are in the wintertime, not just with these Garden Glow events or these nighttime events, but they're, you know, just looking through the garden in the winter and seeing some of the plants and how they look and how they shine. Some plants certainly do that for us in the wintertime by, you know, with berries or with bark color or bark texture or just form, you know, even thinking about things like grasses and how they look in the wintertime and that winter interest that they provide, you know, even just those spent reproductive structures on some flowers and grasses, those look really great in the wintertime. And a lot of times that's all we kind of have to look at. And it's just beautiful. And they have really great evergreens, especially in the Japanese garden area, that are beautiful all year round. And then, you know, I think about things about what can we do inside this time of year. And of course, the Butterfly House, which is a part of the Botanical Garden out in Chesterfield and Faust Park. You know, if you haven't been out there in a while, that place is always great, especially this time of year. It's always nice and toasty warm, a great place to take the kids. Or I don't have any kids, but I am one big giant kid. So I love going out there and seeing all the butterflies and moths and, you know, the cocoons and all of the different plants that are in that area. But that's a great place to go, of course. The Climatron at the Botanical Garden in the city is also a nice warm and toasty place to go and experience the plants that are out in the world. So another really great one. And then another event at the Botanical Gardens. It's going to be, it's called Smelling the Bouquet, Plants and Scents in the Garden. And this one's been going on for several months now. But I think it's really cool. You know, this is inside the Saks Museum. So again, inside on a cold day. But the highlight of the exhibition is to sniff over 24 scents that are, you know, just different fragrances of different plants, live plants. And then they also have different like botanical compounds that people use for perfumes and things like that. So I think that's really interesting to me. Again, I haven't made it out to that, but I'm hoping to do so. That is actually going on all the way till the end of March. So great idea if you're looking in the coming weeks, even, you know, you have some kids are home from school for another week or so, and it's cold or it's turning cold in the next week. Great ideas to go and have something to do inside that is plant related. Another one, not involved with the botanical garden, but at Forest Park, they have the Jewel Box as well, which is another great place to go plant related inside, out of the elements. So a lot of great options for us out there. But, you know, check it out. If you have any other thoughts on places we can go on these gloomy, foggy, cold days, I'd love to hear about things that are happening around town that I don't freeze my freeze out there in the elements. So 314-436-7900. That is the number to call or text the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX. We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I'm your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape here in St. Louis. I'm here answering all of your garden-related, plant-related questions. 314-436-7900. That is the number to call or text. Phone lines are wide open. So if you guys have any questions, we can get to you right away. I also wanted to talk a little bit about something that I am learning more and more about. There are two things in this on this show that scare me is when you guys call and you ask me questions about grass and when you ask me questions about vegetable gardening. So I've been doing, the last several years, I've been doing a little bit of gardening at home. And so this year I've already started, you know, those seed catalogs came in the mail. I got seed catalogs from Baker Creek, Johnny Select Seed. And I've been starting, you know, I have my little gardening journal that I use, but I've been looking through these seed catalogs. I've been using a great resource that we have here locally. It's called Seed St. Louis. And it's a great organization that does, a bunch of things for schools and education opportunities for the youth. But they also do a ton of community gardens all over St. Louis. And, they have a really great resource in this planting calendar that they have and is available online, especially for people like me that are still very much learning about when to start my seeds inside, what seeds should I start inside, which seeds should we start outdoors. So I've really been looking at this resource, seedstl.org, but they have this really great seed planting calendar, and it's telling me, you know, how to prepare for the upcoming months. Looking at January, it says, you know, about midway through January, we can start seeding our broccoli and cabbage. Onions can be seeded in the beginning of January. So it's just a really great visual on how to plant your garden or sow your seeds. And it gives you a great thing that's great visual where you're either starting seedlings indoors or you're sowing your seeds directly into the soil. And then it's when is the planting period? When is the growing period? When is the harvest period? And it's, like I said, just really great, easy to read chart with all different kinds of vegetables on it. So for all of you novice gardeners, veggie gardeners, it's a great resource. We do have a call on the line. Sherry, go ahead with your question.
Thanks for taking my call. And about that seedstl.com, do they give you information as to when to not start the seeds, but when to plant them month by month. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, it gives you, it's not only when to start the seeds indoors or which seeds should you start indoors, which one should you start directly out in the garden, but also when you should be planting them outside once you've, if you're successful at growing them from seed inside, when you should, when you should transplant them outside or when you, if you can purchase them here locally, when you should go ahead and start planting those in the garden. But it's a great resource.
Oh, yeah. One, I'm one of those people that, okay, Christmas is over. No. New Year's is over. It's now spring. Yes. I should be planting.
Yeah,
that's
right. For sure.
But I have a couple of questions about trimming or cutting back shrubbery.
Yep.
I have a rose bush and let's see, what boxwood and some, I call them fire bushes, you know, the ones that turn really red in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be contained, shall we say? And I was wondering if today would be a good day, or should I just not do anything to them until it gets to be a little bit consistently a little bit warmer?
Yeah, these are good questions, and I love talking about pruning. It's one of the things I think as a gardener or home gardener, it can be the most confusing. So when I think about my pruning, I always talk about when are things going to flower, or is flower even an issue? So things like your roses, those all bloom on the new wood, so you can prune them really right now or whenever. As far as roses go, I do like to wait a little bit longer on those. Roses sometimes get winter damage. So in order to protect the tips of the branches, I just wait, because you could prune those now and still get winter damage where you made those cuts. So then you got to prune those again, and you're going to either prune them shorter or just remove some of those dead tips from the winter damage. So I am a lazy gardener. I don't want to do things twice. So I just wait until later in February. Late February is when I typically start. Mid to late February is when I tend to start with roses. And then as far as boxwoods go, now is fine. Kind of depends on what you're going for. But absolutely, pruning your boxwoods in the dormant time is perfect. So you could go ahead and do that if you want. And then firebush, or I think you're talking about burning bush probably.
Yes, that's it.
Those guys, you can prune whenever you want. They are tough plants. We're not really growing those for the flower. In fact, we want to keep those from flowering and going to seed, because they have started to become invasive in our woods. So if we can keep those from flower and going to seed, that will help the spread. So absolutely, go ahead and prune those burning bush. Did I get all of them?
Yes, and you even told me that the burning bush flowers. I had no idea that it had flowers.
Yeah, it does. It's very insignificant. They're really small. And again, we normally prune the heck out of these guys. So even boxwoods. Boxwoods also bloom in the early spring, and we don't often see them because we do so much pruning on our boxwood. So we actually get a lot of calls sometimes in the early spring, and people are saying, "What's wrong with my boxwoods?" And it's just the flower, because people are just not used to seeing the flower on boxwood sometimes.
Okay, and can I ask you one more question, because I just thought of it? I've got some liriope, and you know, it's like collapsed, shall we say.
Sure.
Because we had that snow.
Yep.
Can you cut that back too?
You can. Again, you know, the liriope looks a little rough right now. A lot of grasses look a little bit rough right now from the snow, and even a lot of this wetness that just generalized wetness that we've had around the last few weeks. But yeah, you can cut that back now. It's not going to hurt anything. A lot of times we leave it up because it is a little bit mostly evergreen, so we leave it up. But if it's not looking good, you know, for sure, feel free to go ahead and cut that back.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Sherry. And we're going to go up next to Phyllis. Phyllis, thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your question.
Good morning, Michelle. I received and I've never had one before. It's called a Big Daddy Hosta.
Okay.
Now, do I have to plant that now? It's in a pot, and the person who gave it to me watered it thoroughly. I really wasn't sure if I, because I don't have, like, none of the stores really have the organic soil, and they don't have the mulch right now.
Sure.
And so I didn't want to just plant it out there with nothing. So is it okay to leave it in the pot until spring or March or?
Yeah, is it still like big and full with leaves and stuff?
The leaves on it are all brown.
Yeah. So it's kind of gone dormant or started to go dormant.
But then do I just continue to water it through the winter?
Or? Yeah, you can do either. You know, it is a little, it's probably risky to do it now. Like if we have a mild winter, it would probably be fine. But we are getting ready to go into a cold snap. So this would, I would kind of almost treat like anything else you're maybe overwintering, like a tuber or things like that. You can let it go dormant. I wouldn't worry too much about those leaves up top. But I would make sure just to keep it watered. And you know, even if you stick it in like a garage or down in your basement, I don't think that's going to hurt it because a lot of times you can even order, hostas and they come in the mail as like bare root or they're in with some peat moss or something like that. So, I would just say keep it moist, don't let it dry out and it should be fine.
And then I have a crepe myrtle that this is going to be the third year. And it's still tiny, and I don't have a large garden area. You know, it's very narrow. And so I didn't cut it back before the winter. Now, can I just trim it up a little come spring or?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then I have one more question. I have a bush in my front, and I don't know what kind it is, but it has the sticker needles on it.
Okay.
And it kind of turns colors in that. It's not the burning bush, though, because I had one, and one winter just killed it. And so I was wondering if this bush, if I can trim it any time. Because it doesn't get flowers, but, like, right now it looks kind of pinkish.
So
pink and beige.
Yeah, so during the growing year, does it have, like, a purpley leaf to it? Or what color is the leaf?
No, but sometimes the leaves are green. And sometimes they look kind of yellowish. Like I say, right now, they look kind of pinkish or beige.
If it doesn't, if you're not growing it for flowers, then I would say go ahead and trim it now. It could be a barberry. It could be pyracantha.
Oh, okay.
It could be,
Sounds familiar. It was here when I moved here.
Yeah, it's probably a barberry. If it has thorns, I would say the most common is probably barberry if it's not like a rose. And that would be fine to prune. Then remember when you're pruning barberries, those guys can get a little bit leggy. So giving them a nice haircut is great. But then also if there's any dead or diseased older canes in the middle, you can cut those out with your hand pruners.
Okay. All right. All right, I appreciate that. I still consider myself a beginner.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I do it professionally, but there's still so much to learn. It's one of the things I love about gardening is that whoever you're talking to, I can learn something from everybody. So good luck with that.
All right, well, thank you.
Yep.
Happy New Year.
You too. All right, guys, great questions. Let's take a quick break. Then we'll be back to answer more of your questions. 314-436-7900. It's the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX. We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I'm your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape. We are here talking about plants. I'm here to answer your questions. 314-436-7900. That is the number to call or text. We're going to go straight to the phone lines. We've had Bill waiting for a while. Bill, go ahead with your question.
Yes, I have an apple tree that was planted in 1988 by my father-in-law, and it's leaned to the right for a long time. But should I put a 4x4 post in to help it, make sure it doesn't fall all the way over?
Yeah. So this is a great question. So a lot of times when we have these more mature trees, it's hard to do much in order to straighten them back out, which sounds like it's not something you're trying to do. You're just trying to prevent it from falling over, which is a big concern, especially when you get that heavy weight of the fruit on it. We can oftentimes get broken branches or trees falling over. So, yes, I think that is a great thing to do. I see it all the time with trees that are With fruit trees specifically, like I said, they do get that heavy weight on it. So in order to support it and to help prevent it from falling over with the weight, I would do that. Here is the thing that I will say, though, is if you can make the support movable, meaning, you know, just like when we do any kinds of staking or anything to support a tree or branches, it should be moved or adjusted every year or so. As the tree grows, it will start to grow around whatever support structure, whether it's a wire or a piece of wood. It will start to grow around it or through it, whatnot. So if you are going to do something, if you can make it so that it is movable every year or two, I would recommend that just for the overall health of the tree.
Okay, and then I have a willow tree that Mike Miller didn't think would ever make it, but it's barely alive now. It looks like it's been cut in half in the trunk. Is there anything that I can do to help it be more productive or still living or just let nature take its course?
I mean, I think both of those things are an option to just leave it and see what happens. If there are, you know, if there's like a wound or something at the trunk, you said it looks like it's been kind of cut in half. I always try to make sure that any kind of damage or cuts or broken bits are as clean as possible. So if you have like a jagged area that you can clean up the cut in any way to help that tree heal over it. If it's a place where, you know, water can get in and settle, I would definitely try to mitigate that so we're not having fungal issues. But the other thing you can do is just, you know, maybe do a soil test or give it a little bit of fertilization. And then general maintenance pruning if there are dead bits or crossing branches or diseased areas, just kind of cutting those out and leaving them be. But a lot of times when we have these older trees or trees that have just kind of been struggling or had like a major damage event that happened years ago, there's not a ton we can do for those except for to keep them healthy in other ways. And even with our watering, you know, just consistent watering, especially when we had these times of drought over the years. The last few years, we've had some significant drought and, you know, willows tend to like water. So making sure you're keeping those watered in times of drought will also help with that struggle.
Okay, thank you very much, and you have a happy new year.
Yeah, you too, Bill. Thanks for the call. Up next, we're going to go to Shotzi. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, I have a Japanese, I don't know if it's a willow or it says it's like a maple, but a willow. I'm trying to find out if now is a good time to prune it back. It's really out of control, and then how much of it can I prune back? I've been told only a certain percent.
Yeah, so it really just depends. You know, if it's a Japanese maple, even if it's a willow, I think identifying it might be helpful if you can identify it. But right now,
it is more the willow than the maple.
Okay. So both of these trees were not really growing for the flower. So dormant pruning is great. Sometimes if it's a maple, for those of you out there listening, you know, pruning it when we are above freezing like today, there's a lot of sap that might run. So if you're going to do dormant pruning on a maple, I would wait till it's a little more frozen. But, you know, as far as a willow goes, dormant pruning on those can happen anytime. And depending on the type of willow is one that could probably take a little bit more. Is it shrub form or tree form?
Shrub.
So, and how big is it?
It's probably about 6 foot tall and, well, probably about 7 foot tall and about 6 foot wide.
So is it one of the, it has like almost a little bit of a variegated leaf, like a dappled willow?
Yes.
Yeah. So those can take a really hard cut back. Like you could almost cut those to the ground and they will flush right back out. So on most shrubs, I wouldn't do that every year, but every, you know, 3 or 5 years, you can do a harder cut back on those. Typically what we say with pruning is the rule of thirds. So you don't want to take more than one third of the tree or shrub to keep it healthy.
Right.
But there are some shrubs like a willow or like a dogwood, variegated dogwood or red twig dogwood that can take a harder cut back every 3 or 5 years.
Okay, yeah, because this one's completely covering my walkway.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say you could do a pretty hard cutback on those.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call. Guys, we are at the end of the first hour, if you can believe that. That went very quickly. So we're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back and answer more of your questions. 314-436-7900. That is the number to call or text to the Garden Hotline on 1041 KMOX. Welcome back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I'm your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape here in St. Louis. We are here answering your questions, talking about gardening and plants. Give us a call, 314-436-7900. That is the number to call or text in your questions. We're going to go to the phone lines first. Then I have some texts that have been backing up. But let's go to Guy. Guy, thanks for your patience. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, I just turned in, and I don't get to listen to you every week, but you may have answered this many times. When is the best time to put out pre-emergent crabgrass killer?
This is one of my favorite things to talk about, turf, which is not to say that I don't have a lot of knowledge of the turf pre-emergent, but I can tell you that it's mostly temperature related. So typically, I believe that you want to do it before our soil temps hit 55 degrees in the springtime. So I know that we're not often out there with a thermometer, but there are places you can look at online, our local soil temperature, but we want to do it before things start warming up. The soil will warm up so that one of the first ones is crabgrass, and those seeds that are in our grass that make those weeds start to germinate when the soil temperature is 55 degrees. So we want to make sure that we have our pre-emergent down well before then. So that's what I would just say, watch those temperatures, because it's hard to say, because sometimes we have a really cold extended winter, and sometimes we have a warm February, and you might want to get those down a little bit sooner. So I can't say put it down March 1st. What I can say is just watch the temperature of the soil.
So if it's put down even February 1st, it's not going to hurt anything?
No, it won't hurt anything. You may need to put it down again because it only lasts so long. So read the label of whatever product you're putting down. You'll want to make sure you know how long that product will last. And of course, that is dependent on how much rain we get, whether or not you have an irrigation system that gets turned on later. But you'll just need to start the clock. Like if you put it down February 1st, just make sure you know how long that's going to last, and then you're going to put it down again according to the label.
And any recommendations on a brand?
I don't have any recommendations on a brand. I know that there are a ton of products at our big box stores, but we do have Glenn Kramer that works that is on our show all the time, and he owns G.R. Robinson Seed, that's here in St. Louis, and he's got all your seed, your fertilizer, pre-emergence, all of that stuff. So if you look up G.R. Robinson Seed, then Glenn Kramer can answer all of that stuff for you, tell you what products and things like that. So he will probably even have a better answer for you when to put it down. But that's our go-to for lawn care here in St. Louis.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Guy, and thanks for your patience. We are going to go to the text line. We're talking earlier in the show about books, and you know, I received the book Service Berry for Christmas. It's called The Service Berry by Robin Wall Kimmerer. I never can say your name right. Kimmerer. But that's a great book for gardeners. Somebody texted in that said, speaking of gardening books, I got myself for Christmas The Nature of Oaks by Douglas Tallamy. Incredible information about how many insects and caterpillars oak trees host. why they retain their leaves in winter and how they communicate with one another. I also bought myself Felco pruning shears. Good choice. That's my one of my go-tos. Worth every dollar. Thank you for discussing natives, and please be kind to groundhogs. They're very necessary in our ecosystem. Cheers, Laura. Laura, thanks for that text. You know, Douglas Tallamy, if you guys are not familiar, he's got some really great books out there. Doug is a entomologist, and he's also the author of so many great books that a lot of us who are into gardening and nature have read. One of them is The Nature of Oaks, which Laura mentioned, but there's also a book called Bringing Nature Home that he wrote, and Nature's Best Hope is also another one. But he's really into talking about sustainable practices and native plants and things like that, just different biodiversity and how you can do a little bit in your own little yard. And you know, I love talking about natives and sustainability and all that stuff. And I always want to, you know, caveat that with, you know, you don't have to be perfect in any of this. I think there are so many of us that are that get a little bit overwhelmed by, you know, getting into natives or sustainability or recycling or whatever it may be. But I just, you know, I'm not a purist. I have both natives and other ornamental species in my yard. I love natives. I want to use them when I can. But I want to just stress that you don't have to have every single plant in your yard be native. I think if you can work towards getting out the invasives that are in our yards, you know, like the burning bush or Bradford pears or things of that nature, getting your honeysuckle under control, and starting to plant some native trees, and shrubs. And I think that's great. So, you know, but there's also other plants that are out there that are non-native. Like one of my go-tos that I talk about often is Calamintha, which is not a native here. The Montrose White cultivar is my favorite, and also readily available at most of our garden centers throughout the year. But that's not a native, but it does great. But so I just think that, you know, to be more approachable in these topics like natives and conservation and biodiversity and all of those things, like these books are a great way to start, a great way to kind of dip your toe into the pool of all of those things, and doing little things every day that can make an impact on our world is really great. But great suggestion for books. And then we have a question from Chris, going from natives to an invasive. He's got a question about wisteria, which I have, you know, kind of a love-hate relationship with, because this wisteria plant has started to escape the confines of our home gardens, and we're starting to see them in our natural areas. So be careful with the wisterias. But Chris is basically asking, I have a couple wisteria that the stems and trunks and vines are growing like crazy, which is what wisteria does. They're huge. It never blooms, though. I've had them for 4 or 5 years, never got a bloom. How can I make them bloom? I've heard about trimming aggressively. How aggressive can I trim? So this is a great question. You know, like I said, wisteria is not one I always recommend to people for planting. It can be very aggressive. It is a high maintenance plant, in my opinion. And again, it can it is becoming a little bit weedy, and it's showing up in our natural areas. But if you have one already, there's 2 times a year that we basically prune these guys to keep them in check. And one time is after they bloom in the summertime. It's a great time to cut back, you know, these long, wispy new growths back to, I don't know, let's say 6 inches or so, 6 or 8 inches back to that lateral line that comes off of the main trunk. And that's a good thing to identify in the wintertime when we do our other time to prune wisteria. Is the wintertime is a great time to kind of identify where the main trunk is, where are your lateral vines coming off, because that's where you want to prune back to, those laterals that are coming off of the main trunk. And it's a great time in the winter time right now, or even into January, February is a great time to do your harder wisteria pruning, because you can see all the vines, all the leaves are off. So it makes it easier for them to be seen. So in the winter, what you really want to do is you want to prune your lateral branches off of the main trunk, including all of those that you might have cut down to 6 inches in the summertime. But you want to cut those back to about 3 to 5 buds. So you're going to look for those branches that are coming off, and you want to prune those back to about 3 to 5 buds, because that's where your flowers are gonna grow from, are those little nubs that you prune back to. So pruning back heavily in the wintertime promotes the flower growth, right? Because it's going to put the energy after the prune into flower making. Whereas in the summertime, it's sending all of its energy into leaves and growth. But it is important to deal with these guys and prune them a couple times a year. If you have one that is overgrown, that's taking over, it's completely out of control, you can cut those back very hard, removing any of the crowding lateral branches back to the main trunk. And really, you can give those quite a big cut back if you've reached a point where it's out of control. So just be careful. Again, wisteria can be invasive in our woodland. So if you already have them, that's one thing. And just be careful. I'm not sure if there's actually sterile varieties out there or not, but look into them. Are very beautiful plants, though, especially if you're growing them on a trellis or some kind of a structure. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to answer more of your questions. 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX. This is the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape, and we are here talking about plants on a Saturday morning. If you want to join the conversation, 314-436-7900, that is the number to call or text your questions, and we will do our best to answer and talk about all of these things that you guys have going on with your plants and things like that. You know, one of our previous texts talked about, buying themselves a pair of Felco pruning shears for Christmas. And, you know, the pruners is often one of the things that I tell new gardeners or even old gardeners to invest in. If it's something that you're going to be doing and you're going to be out in your yard, having tools that do a good job is really important. So, you know, things like hand pruners can be a little bit expensive, and it's so easy to go to a big box store or something like that and grab a pair of inexpensive pruners. But if you're really getting into gardening, then I think that's something that you can invest in. There's three that I like to get. One is those really nice pruners. Felco is a fantastic brand. I also really like Okatsuni pruners. It's a Japanese brand. I'm going to try to spell it. O-K-A-T-S-U-N-E. Okatsuni are really great pruners as well. Those are some forged steel that you can really sharpen yourself, whereas Felcos have replaceable blades, so when those get dull, you can replace those out. So that is a good thing about those Felcos. Again, some of these get a little expensive for pruners, but you're talking 40, 50 bucks for a nice pair of pruners as opposed to, you know, 15 bucks or something like that. I think it's an investment. Another tool that I really like is a soil knife. There are all different brands. I always get mine from A.M. Leonard, which, if you're not familiar with that company, they have all kinds of garden tools and equipment. But that's a good resource. Just a really good folding saw. And the brand that I love for that is Silky, S-I-L-K-Y, Silky Saws. And those are relatively inexpensive as well. But those three tools, if you're just out doing some gardening, you can really get a lot done. So those are my three go-to, my favorite tools. But let's go to another text that we got. Somebody's talking about their Christmas presents that they received this year. This person got two plants for Christmas, lucky you, and they want to know how to care for them. One of them is a frosty fern, and the other is a cyclamen, and they just really want to know how to care for these. So the frosty fern, I've actually never owned one of these before, but you see them a lot around this time of year, and they're actually not a fern but a type of moss, a spike moss. So these guys don't really like to dry out. They like bright indirect light, so you get them in a good spot, and then you want to keep the soil on these moist, but you need to make sure you have well draining soil. So this is one of those things that with these house plants that we get. A lot of times the soil that we use for outside, like regular potting soil, that type of soil, potting soil, is made to hold moisture as long as possible. So a lot of times with my house plants, I like to get a different mix that is maybe a little chunkier, a little sandier, so that you have some really good drainage. And you want to make sure that there are drain holes in that pot so any excess water can drain off and it's not sitting in too much water. And then these like high humidity, which our typical homes do not have high humidity. So these guys don't always do well in just a regular household. So creating a more humid condition will help those as well. And then as far as our cyclamens go, those guys like it cold, believe it or not. So this is often one that I kill. I think I've killed several of these. They kind of look a little bit like an African violet, but they're blooming right now. We see these a lot around Christmas time because they bloom right now, and there's all different colors of pinks and mauve and purple and things like that. But they're really cute plants, and they do a great job of blooming. So to keep those doing well, you want to try to keep those cool, which again is sometimes hard to do in our homes because we can tend to keep them about 70 degrees or so this time of year. But they do prefer it to be like 55, 60, 65 degrees. So I'm not saying put it by a window because that often is too cold, but you know, maybe definitely don't put it by like a vent in your home where the heat is blasting out. And they like it also to be humid as well. So a cool, humid place for these guys. And these guys you also want to keep pretty wet as well. It's very important to water these. They have tubers that if they're planted correctly, they kind of sit above the soil line a little bit. So keeping them wet because they do dry out a little bit and they don't like that. The other thing to remember is overhead watering on these guys, and a lot of houseplants don't like that overhead watering. So watering from below if you can. There's some really cool self-watering pots out there that help with this. So if you can get one of those, or at least water from below when you can, to try to keep that tuber from rotting out. But two cool houseplants. Definitely the frosty fern is not as common as some of them. And again, I've never owned one of the frosty ferns, but they're cool plants. So I hope that goes well for you and you can keep those alive. Again, I've never the cyclamen plant that I have now is at my office, and somebody brought it in. And we have a lot of plants in our office, if you can imagine, but this one I'm sure is doomed. It's one of those that I have not been successful with. So keep the questions coming. 314-436-7900. That's the number to call. Chat with me on the Garden Hotline. We're going to take a quick break. It's 104.1 KMOX.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No. Anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We're back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape. Number to call with your questions, 314-436-7900. If you're not up for the phone call, give us a text as well. We'll try to answer all of those in the order we received them. But we're going to go straight to the phone lines and talk to Mary. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. I was just calling to ask about, I have a Hindu rope that we received as a gift in 1997 and had three little branches coming off that were maybe 6 inches long. And now this has multiplied and I have a lot of arms and they're as long as like 7 feet. And I'm thinking that I would love to trim this back. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, for sure. This is another houseplant that I've never owned, but I think that it is one that, you know, anytime we have these houseplants, for those of you guys out there that aren't familiar, these are kind of a little traily, viney, that kind of go over the edge of your pot. So, keeping them in check is good, but pruning them also promotes new growth. It also helps to keep the plants a lot healthier. So anytime we're pruning these kind of house plants or anything, really, just make sure you're cleaning whatever you're using, whether it be, you know, a pair of scissors or shears or something like that. But it's always good to prune that stuff off for dead or damaged or diseased parts. But you want to be careful. I believe these have like little spurs or little buds, flower spurs. So you want to make sure that you're looking for those and you want to try to avoid pruning those. But pruning also will help these guys to create new branches, which creates, you know, more areas for them to flower. And I think that if you want to do like a heavier pruning, they recommend springtime for this one. But I think you can do it really year round, especially if it's becoming leggy. And if it's, as you know, you've had it around for a while, I bet it is becoming a little bit leggy. But then you can propagate those cuttings as well. Like you can put them, like a lot of plants, you can put them into like a glass of water until the new roots grow, or even straight into some soil with some rooting hormone.
What about transplanting it? I'm fearful that maybe it has become root bound.
Yeah, and transplanting, you know, I don't know about this one, but there's a lot of plants that like to be root bound a little bit. Like I know my Sansevieria, my mother-in-law's tongue, or snake plant, they call it. Those guys don't necessarily like to have a bigger pot. They like to be root bound. But I do think this one is one that you can slowly upsize. I think that's also a mistake that some people make when they do repot things. They go to a much, much bigger pot. And I think that just going up slightly, because a lot of houseplants, and I do believe this is one that prefers to be really snug in their pot. So avoiding like a huge upsize in your pot is good. But that fresh, getting a little bit of fresh soil, getting a little bit of, you know, that old soil cleaned up a bit is always good every few years. So if you haven't done it in a while, definitely do that. But I would stress not going too big on whatever pot you go to. I would just do it a little bit bigger than what it's in.
Okay, awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, good luck with that, Mary. Thanks for the call. Up next, we are going to go to Greg. Greg, welcome to the show. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for your program. We love it. Michelle, we've got a couple of Christmas roses outside, and they survive pretty nicely, but very, very, very seldom seem like they get to bloom. Because, like, last year when it got really, really cold, it just knocked them out. Almost killed them, I think. Can you give us any hints on care and feeding and of these things?
Are you talking about, like, the hellebore? The little perennials?
It's very flat to the ground.
Yeah.
The flowers that come up from the very center of it.
Yep. So for those unfamiliar, Christmas rose or Lenten rose, they're also called, but they're hellebores. It's a little perennial. And one of the cool things about hellebore is that they bloom super early. And they just kind of are a cool plant throughout the year. They have a chunkier leaf than most and relatively low maintenance plant. So what I like to do with the hellebores, tell me, how long have you had them planted? Are they newer? Or?
Oh, no, they've been around for years.
Okay. When we have these times of, last February, we had like really hot, dry February. So that kind of affected them a lot, but we leave these alone for the most part. Don't do anything to them in the fall. Kind of that foliage helps to protect them a little bit. If it stays upright, a lot of times they do flop. But minimal pruning, even in the spring. The only thing that I'm cutting back in the spring is anything that's winter damage, which might be the whole plant. The last few winters that we've had, they've been really rough coming out of winter and brown leaves. So cutting back anything that's winter damaged. But if you're having an issue with them, you might just do a soil test to see if there's something going on with the soil. Is it just the last few years, or it's just like it's always been an issue?
They always get where they're getting ready to put something up. They put something up, but it very seldom blooms.
Yeah. And a lot of times, like, again, we have, these can be a little iffy if we have a late frost, if we have a late snow. And sometimes that happens right when these are getting going. But that's interesting that, if that's not the case, that they didn't get hit by frost or a snow, that's happening. So I would check nutrients. I would monitor moisture. If they get dried out, they can kind of abort that flower or whatever's coming up. So maybe just do a soil test, and then this spring as they're coming out, just make sure that they're consistently watered. But again, they don't like to sit in water. So I don't have anything that's really popping out at me other than potentially soil related or weather related. But these guys are typically super great, low maintenance, not a lot of pest and disease problems.
Right, right. No, nothing ever bothers them. That's a great thing, but sure would love to see them bloom a little more.
Yeah, good luck with that. Soil tests could, maybe they do need some nutrients, maybe something's changed in your soil to be contributing to that, but I would guess that either soil or weather related.
Okay, great. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, good luck with that. Up next, we're going to go to Bob. Bob, go ahead with your question.
Hey, good morning. I've got an asparagus question. I've had it in the ground for about 3 years, and I haven't cut any for myself yet. And I'm a little worried if I'm doing it the right thing, right way. I was told it's got to be all the way not green before you cut it back. Is that true? Or
I haven't cut mine back yet. I just planted asparagus for the first time. I think this will be my third season coming up, and I haven't cut mine, obviously, as well for consumption.
Okay.
And I have not cut mine back at all. And again, that may not be the correct thing to do, but I did let mine completely brown out. But I will tell you that in January I'm going to have somebody that's really good, a gardener that is a vegetable grower, that's going to come in and we'll be able to answer all of our asparagus questions. I know we get a lot of tomato questions, but just growing food in general, we're going to have a show in January. I don't have that finalized yet, but but check into that when we have it. But again, I didn't do anything to my asparagus this year.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. Good luck. Up next, we have Emily on the line. Emily, go ahead with your question.
Oh, thank you. I have two questions. First one, do you know Liriope spicata?
Uh-huh. Sure.
Okay. Does it ever get a length and then stop?
No.
Oh, really? Oh, shoot.
Well, the top length is... It will get to a length and stop, but it will continuously spread
underneath.
Yeah.
Yes. Spreading is fine because I know that's like that's the technical term. I know that's spreading monkey grass, and I bought that on purpose. And 20 years, the area that I have is almost covered, but I just cut that once at the end of the summer. And I just was wondering, maybe I don't even have to do that. Maybe it'll just stop growing in height.
Yeah, it will. It will. And it's variable. Like these guys typically are around, let's say 12 inches is their max height. But they can get, and if they're super happy, they can get 16 inches tall as well. But most of the time they stay, it's generally around 12 inches. It's very rare for them to get much taller than that. And it is your choice whether I know a lot of people don't cut back their liriope at all, which makes it incredibly low maintenance, or they just do it every couple of years.
I love it.
Yep. It's a good
second question. Yep. Real quick. For Christmas, I got one of those combo plants, and I can identify a Christmas cactus in here, and I can also identify Schlumbagera and one other plant. It doesn't make any difference what they are naming, but what do I do? Should I separate it now?
Yes.
Or should I wait?
You have some time. Obviously, it doesn't need to happen right this second, but a lot of times the plants that they put in those mixes don't have the same growing conditions. Plus, they're going to get bigger. So I would definitely, sooner than later, go ahead and try to transplant those.
All right. Happy New Year, right?
Yes. Thank you so much. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Guys, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back for our final segment of the Garden Hotline. 314-436-7900. That is the number to call. 1041 KMOX. It's the Garden Hotline. We are in the final segment of the show. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I'm your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape. We're going to go straight to the phone lines, and we have Kaya on the line. Go ahead with your question.
We have to wait in line.
Hello?
Hi, this is Jaya.
Oh, Jaya, go ahead with your question.
Well, we were wondering, what is a good flower to plant if we want bees?
Oh, I love this question so much, Jaya. And I, this is my trusty crowd of listeners up in Michigan, but planting flowers for the bees is really great. We want to make sure that we are doing all of that and trying to plant our native plants if possible. But you know, one that I really love that is not a native, we talked about it earlier, is called Calamintha. And it's a great one for pollinators, and it smells really good too. So that's a great one. And, you know, there's a plant called bee balm that is named after bees, but it's Monarda is a type that's also really good for bees. What do you think about that?
We will try them. I hope they can live in California.
they may or may not live in California, but good luck with that. Thanks
Merry
for the
Christmas,
call.
Michelle.
Merry Christmas, guys. Oh, man, don't you just love family? That's my family in Michigan, some folks that I think are visiting from California. So that plant palette might be a little bit different than what we have here in St. Louis. But, you know, planting for pollinators is a good thing. We always want to think about that. Another question we got on the text line, it's just some clarification on pruning Japanese maples. And this is one, guys, that, you know, I always talk about dormant pruning and making sure that we are doing things at the right time. But maple is one that can be a little bit tricky. You know, doing our pruning on maples, Japanese maples, included in the late fall into early winter is really a great time to do it. And then also when our tree is fully dormant. So one of the things, though, that maples do is maples have a lot of sap that can run, especially when we have a time of frozen temperatures and then it goes above the freeze line and we have temperatures above freezing. And then that is a time where we are triggering this plant to have this heavy bleeding that happens if we make a cut at that time. So if you are pruning our Japanese maples, any of your maples in the wintertime, just be careful that you're doing it when it's frozen and when it's not above freezing. You know, think about where we get maple syrup and all of that stuff, but that happens this time of year. Actually, I've seen a few things online where people are out collecting syrup from maples because of these warmer temperatures that we've had the last few days. So just take care of that. Anytime we are doing pruning, we're opening up our plants to pest and disease issues, and they have to heal over those wounds. So maples, we just want to make sure that they're not sending out all of that sap when we make those cuts, because that will open up to pest and disease issues. So that's a great question for pruning. I always love talking about pruning. It's one of those things that I could do, hand pruning specifically. If I could get paid to just go around and do hand pruning throughout the year, and I'm sure I could. I just I'd like to get paid more than that. So, but hand pruning is great. This is a great time of year. It's often, you know, we get these warm days in December, January. We get the itch to get outside and do that pruning. So just make sure we're careful with those maples. But other than that, if we're just doing these dormant pruning on our late blooming shrubs and trees and or shrubs and trees that we're not super worried about that bloom. But as with all pruning, you know, the timing is important to think about what is in bloom, what when is it blooming? And that will dictate when we can do our pruning for those things. So great questions today, guys. You know, we're coming into the new year. So by the time I talk to you guys again, it's going to be past the new year's time. Again, I'm getting out my garden journal. I'm thinking about the year that I've had. Not only just in general, but in the garden, I think about, you know, everything that we have gone through as a community this year. You know, 2025, last year I said 2024 was the hardest year of my career. Now I'm saying it about 2025, but, you know, just the weather fluctuations made things really challenging. We had a tornado in May that just was massive devastation. And just so much has happened to us this year. So take the time to reflect on that. Take the time to think about what went well. Don't just think about the negative. Think about what went well in your life and in the garden. What do you want to do more of? What can you change in order to be more successful in your gardens in the new year? But now's the time to plan. We're in the winter where you can't do too much outside. So get out those seed catalogs. Think about what you want to change for the new year. This has been a great conversation. If you guys want to reach me after the show, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at STL Plant Nerd. You can also listen to the show if you missed any part of it or any other episode. Go to the Odyssey app or KMOX.com. And we will look forward to more conversations about plants next week on the Garden Hotline, 104.1 KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.